Welcome to Internet Marketing Insights. Each week on our program, we choose a theme related to internet marketing, bring you different guests to speak about and help you understand those themes. This week on our show, on-page SEO. My guest, Kevin Pike, Interactive Marketing Director at Sweet Spot Marketing. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Thanks for coming. Tell us a little bit about what you do and tell us a little bit about Sweet Spot Marketing.
I've been in online marketing since 2004. Started off in pay-per-click and doing advertising that way. Migrated into SEO about 2007 and been doing SEO ever since. I work for a company called Sweet Spot Marketing. We are based in Kansas City, and we do the full online marketing suite, social media, pay-per-click, SEO.
And you specifically focus on the SEO portion of that, right?
Exactly.
About how many clients do you work on their SEO for, just to give our listeners a feel for kind of like, is it 3, is it 30?
35, give or take a little bit, yeah.
Right. And you have small local clients all the way up to some really big name brands we'd know, right?
Exactly.
Okay. And I'm your host, David McBee of davidmckee.com. I've been helping business owners with their internet marketing for several years, and I write the blog Let's Translate, Making Sense Out of Internet Gobbledygook, where I do my best to simplify complex internet concepts for anyone to understand, very much like we do here on IMI. So Kevin, let's start by explaining to our listeners exactly what we're talking about when we say on-page SEO, because I want this to be for business owners who have never heard that term. How would you describe on-page SEO?
Quite simply, on-page SEO is strategically coding your website to improve your website's position for the keyword rankings that you want to rank for. There's a lot of off-page SEO in the community today, you know, a lot of other things that you can do, but on-page really is about what you can do with your website.
Okay. I often use an analogy when I'm describing to business owners what on-page SEO is. I let them know that their webpage is kind of like an ice cream sundae, and they want to make that ice cream sundae good for Google to come and eat. And the yummiest ice cream sundae, so to speak, is the one that will appear highest on the search results. So like a vanilla, plain old bowl of vanilla ice cream wouldn't be that interesting, nor would a plain old boring website that just has, you know, 5 pages of boring content. But then when you start putting on cherries and chocolate syrup and sprinkles, things like title tags and good clean URLs and fresh content, things like that, those are the things that make Google happier about your website or like your website more. Do you agree with that analogy?
100%. It's a great analogy. Title tags, you mentioned URLs, meta tags, alt text on images, you know, H1 tags, making sure simple things like your image files have good names, you know, what is x3j57.jpg or what is icecream-sunday.jpg. Google can pick up even that kind of minutia in the code, so it's important that you look at a lot of those on-page strategies.
All right, so back up. Tell us a little bit about each of those and what they are. You don't have to explain in great detail to someone who's not going to ever touch HTML optimization. Tell us a little bit about, like, we hear meta tags and meta descriptions a lot in the SEO community, and some folks don't even know what those are.
Right. Those are the two big ones. Your meta description and your title tag are the big ones because those are the ones that show up on the search results. The title tag is what you click on in the search result. The description underneath it is your description text that you put in the code. It's typically not something you're going to see on your website. At the very top of your browser in that blue Internet Explorer bar is where your title tag will show up, but that's it. This is kind of code behind the scenes, and that's again, going back to your analogies, I kind of see it as a filing cabinet. And every page on your website is in a filing cabinet. And the little tab on the top of the folder needs to be unique. And you need to have a different name for each folder in the filing cabinet. And then that's where Google starts when they come to your website. They want to crawl and look at those folder tabs. All the content and all the code you put in that page is the piece of paper in the folder. But if you don't have a good title tag on every single page, Google looks at your site as one big filing cabinet folder of mixed up paper, and they're like, what is this site about? So it all starts with there. When you get into, you know, other minutia on like that piece of paper inside the file folder, again, alt text is something that really no one ever sees that on the browser. Everybody pretty much has their browser settings set to display the image. But behind that image, there is in the code a space where you can put in alt text. So if I have a picture of an ice cream sundae, that's great for the user. If I have alt text that says, this is an ice cream sundae, Google goes, oh, that's a picture of an ice cream sundae. That can help you with image search. That can help you with other things, just as far as getting your website to rank for normal ice cream sundae type of keywords. So those are very important. The other part you want to make sure is your URL. Again, /xkj3.html. Nobody knows what that means, including Google, including users. So that can impact your click-through rate on the search result. But if you put in davidmcbee.com/icecreamsundays, I can see that in the search results. Google can kind of go, I've seen that word before, ice cream sundaes. I probably can anticipate that that's what that page is about. So URLs are important. File names are important. Meta tags important. The other thing you want to think about is the content. We all know content is king. So formatting your content, using H1 tags, using H2 tags, you know.
What does the H in H1 stand for?
Header.
Okay.
You know, very simply, you can bold, italicize text. There is a standard H1 through H6 is what Google can kind of pick up on as kind of a enhanced piece of content above just the normal paragraph content. So use H tags as well.
I'm really loving this this file cabinet analogy of yours. So I'm actually seeing in my brain this piece of paper inside the there, and it's got different headers, if you will,
mm-hmm.
header one, header two, which are kind of like breaking up the content instead of just like my 12-year-old will just write a 500-word essay and it'll all be one paragraph,
right,
or heck, one sentence sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
And what you're saying is you need to break that up, have bullets in there, have different headers, and that's the same thing you need to do on your website. And maybe paper clipped to that piece of paper is an image of an ice cream sundae, and someone wrote on the back, ice cream sundae 2012, or whatever it is.
Exactly.
So I love your analogy. That's really going to make the process of on-site SEO real understandable for our business owners. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Great.
You mentioned this something to me the other day. You said you were looking to hire someone to help you out with SEO, and you had a couple folks come in that claimed to be SEO experts, and you asked them just a handful of questions, and you could tell right off the bat if they knew anything about SEO or not. Does that fit into our conversation at all? Is there anything from that experience that we could share with our business owners that might help them understand maybe who to hire or what to look for?
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. When I'm hiring SEOs to help Sweet Spot Marketing, you're also, from a business owner standpoint, looking to hire SEOs to help your own business. And we all know there's a myriad of SEO companies out there. You know, if you have a contact form on your website, you're probably getting spammed right now with, hey, I can help your website rank better. So we all know they're out there. One of the things that, you know, you really want to pay attention to is, you know, what is the noise? Who are the people who are just looking for, you know, those kinds of spammy tactics to get your business, and who actually cares about you? So go out there and do some research. One of the things that you want to, you know, ask them is, you know, what kind of SEO do you do? Do you do on page? Do you do link building? If they're like, well, we just want to sell you links at $10 a link all day long, run from those people. If you want to also, you know, look at, you know, their own blog on their own website, make sure they actually can kind of back up what they say. You know, if they're not blogging regularly and adding their own fresh content to their own website, SEOing their own website, it's probably a red flag. So there are some things out there that you can just do from a research standpoint. And, you know, there's plenty of blog posts out there on Google right now. If you went out and typed in how to hire an SEO company in 2013, there'll be a lot of good help out there for you.
That's good advice. That's good advice. Now, are there on-page SEO tactics that you feel are irrelevant today in 2013 that people are still using that they probably should just stop? It's like, quit bothering with that.
Right. And going back to the hiring process, if somebody said, yeah, we're going to go through and do your meta keywords and make sure all your keywords are right on like red flag, meta keyword tag is irrelevant. We don't really care about that. If you want to do it, great, but don't lead with that as your SEO strategy.
Why? Tell us why meta keywords are no. I mean, is people over abuse that strategy?
Yeah, early days of SEO, that was, you know, you put in your content, you just repeated your keyword over and over again, and you put it in your meta keyword tag, you repeated it 100 times, and whoever repeated it the most times won. You know, that was how.
I have a confession to make. Back when I was doing online Yellow Pages, you know, and we create the little profiles.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, if you could get the word accountant in there like 20, 30 times, boy, you'd get that guy ranking for accountant. It was a cinch.
Yeah, and that's back in 1999 when we're all using, you know, Netscape or whatever that old browser was.
It was ugly.
Pre-Google. Obviously, the algorithms have caught on to those techniques. So going in there and using your meta keyword tag and saying, okay, I'm going to put these keywords in there and expecting any results out of it. As you know, publicly, like people like Matt Cutts from Google, the authority, kind of goes, we don't use that tag anymore. It's been abused too much. Don't waste your time. But, you know, that's kind of where we're at with that. So there are some red flags like that. There are some wasted times out there that people are worried about those kinds of things.
Okay. I actually want to bring up one as well, and that's keyword stuffing. And I know it's very similar to what we just talked about,
mm-hmm.
but I still see it today when people blog. They will write a blog post about a particular product that they sell or a service that they're trying to provide, and the blog article might be 300 or 400 words, and they've got that keyword in there 10 times.
Right.
You know, and to a reader, it looks silly. It's like, why do they keep mentioning landscaping in Kansas City? Or
right.
why do they keep saying, I'm a pediatric dentist? We get it. We get that you're a pediatric dentist. And I still see people doing this. Sadly, those are the ones that are hard. It's harder for them to learn that this doesn't work anymore. And they're still, I even have one client who hires out her blogging to a professional blogger who still does this. So it drives me nuts.
Yeah, I agree. And I just last week I had a client who was like, I'll handle my own blogging. Thank you very much. We don't need to talk for that. So I said, more power to you. If you can write about your business and you can do a good job, go for it. A couple of weeks went by and I checked up on his blog posting. And sure enough, you know, I warned him. I'm like, you know, don't overstuff your keywords. And he did a pretty good job. He didn't overstuff, but he just had a random boldness. So that on top of keyword stuffing, you'll see some people just randomly bold stuff in the middle of a paragraph that makes no sense, no rhyme or reason. So I totally 100% agree with you. You know, the people who have, you know, the keyword written 5 times in 100 words, it totally looks weird. And then they also will randomly bold it just because they think, oh, if I bold it, it's going to help me rank better, you know. Epic fail. You know, write for the user, write for the person first, write for your readers. The search engines come second. Yeah.
Great. All right. So one of the other things we wanted to talk about regarding on-site SEO was WordPress.
Right.
When we were having lunch the other day, we were talking about how you used to have conversations with clients about converting their built-from-scratch website to a CMS. So that it's kind of like it goes back to your file folder
right.
analogy. They just had this mess of papers, and you're trying to get them organized. Tell us how WordPress plays into that.
You mentioned we had lunch last week, and we talked about it. And after our lunch, I did go back. I just kind of wanted to see if I could find any data on WordPress.
Yeah, you prepared and everything.
I kind of prepared on that. I was curious because I actually remember reading in an article about it. I couldn't remember it at lunch, but it was a 2011 TechCrunch article, and they said WordPress now is powering 22% of all new websites that are going live. And that was back in 2011. I think in 2013 that number's done nothing but go up. So it could be in the 30s or 40s, probably not now.
Right.
But every new website that is created is powered by WordPress. That's huge. You know, I think back 3 or 4 years ago, it was a pretty fair fight between WordPress, Joomla, Drupal. You know, those were all kind of fighting for that CMS supremacy, and I think the war is over. I think everyone's going towards WordPress. I love WordPress. It's very SEO friendly, and I think when you go to the SEO conferences and you hear people talking about website optimization, it's like, why are you not using WordPress? You can do this in the click of a button versus having to go through and, you know, maybe hand-code a template or something like that. So WordPress is going up and up and up. And we see a lot of sites ranking. Well, they use it. It's not just from a development coding standpoint, but it's backed up in the search results. Another stat to throw out at you is, you know, 15% of the top 1 million websites that rank, you know, are built in WordPress. And, you know, it's just, people are going that way. It's just a great system, I think.
I was trying to explain to a client the other day how important a WordPress site could be for her. And she, the big takeaway was that she wouldn't be handcuffed to her web developer forever. It's like, well, once you build the site, if you ever want to make changes to it, you can do it yourself. She said, well, I don't know anything about HTML. I don't know anything about coding. I said, you don't really have to. Knowing those things can be helpful to enhance a WordPress site. But I said, you can put a Facebook plugin in a WordPress site in about 2 seconds. Building that into an original piece would be, hey, call your web designer, tell him you want a plugin. He's going to have to rewrite it. It's going to charge you hundreds of dollars. Plus all of the SEO plugins. There's several SEO plugins. Do you have a favorite?
I use a couple. Yoast is very popular right now. It takes care of a lot of your title tags, meta tags, XML sitemap, your webmaster tools verifications are all built into that. I also like using the Google Analytics plugin because then it takes all the special, you know, if you want to track outbound clicks and not just, you know, internal, you know, traffic, that's all built into the settings as well. So you can do a lot of, you know, customization with your analytics scripts through that plugin. Those are the two that I recommend.
Let's back up a little because I'm reminded that this podcast is for newbies, absolutely, you know, green business owners. Let's explain what a plugin is in WordPress.
Sure. WordPress, fundamentally out of the box, really doesn't have a whole lot of plugins. I think they, like the one that I use is the Achievement one to keep my comment spam out of my blog. But other than that, you're basically just operating on a add a page, WYSIWYG, you know, kind of copy paste my content, click publish, and then I can add a new blog post. And that's fun. That's great. It's what it's built for. But when you start adding plugins into it, then you can start, you know, doing a lot of things. You can do an image gallery.
Back up. What is a plugin? Where do these plugins come from?
WordPress themselves has a site, WordPress.org. I'll back up a little bit more.
Okay.
There's WordPress.com and there's WordPress.org. The .com is I can just go set up an account on WordPress.com and start blogging tomorrow. And they host me, they take care of me, and they have plugins. I can click plugins, add new, and go from there. Really, what we like is to have WordPress.org where you download the entire content management system, install it on your own URL, host it yourself, and then go to WordPress.org and then click on extensions or plugins or whatever they call it, and go just do a simple search. Type in SEO plugins. You'll see a list of probably 100. You know, the one that I like is the one that's built by Yoast, you know, that one. But there's just, you click download and it installs it for you. I mean, it's a click of a button, and then you can just add more and more features. Like I was saying, there's e-commerce extensions, there's photo gallery extensions, and then there's some SEO extensions.
And all these plugins are written by independent developers who have uploaded them, and a lot of them are free, and they kind of hope for a donation. Mm-hmm. And some of them are paid. I don't see a lot of those, to be honest with you.
No.
But really, it's like the whole internet community, all these great minds are creating these pieces of a puzzle that you can just add to your own website without having to hire that brilliant person yourself. This is a brilliant plugin. I'm just going to add it on to what I've got here. I mean, some real basic examples that our listeners might relate to are things like a form creator.
Yeah.
You know, WordPress itself doesn't have just a nice button you click and it creates a form, but you can download a plugin and and it'll add a form to your website so people can put their name, email, phone number, and it sends an automatic email to you.
Yeah.
So, but the question here is on-site SEO. I mean, if 20% of the World Wide Web is WordPress, Google has to create algorithms that understand how to read WordPress. And do you think that WordPress is like the future? Is there going to be something else? Or 5 years from now, the guy who builds a website right now, 5 years from now, is he going to have to build something brand new from scratch in whatever's popular 5 years from now? Or is WordPress going to grow with him? What do you think?
WordPress, the power of open source software is always going to grow. The development community is so large that it's going to grow. It's just one of those things where one person drops off, says, I don't want to do this anymore. There's probably 100 right behind them willing to make their own plugins and move on from there. So I think WordPress will keep up. I don't think Google cares so much about what it is. At the end of the day, Google comes to your website and they crawl the HTML code. They don't care that it's built in Joomla. They don't care that it's built in WordPress. They don't care if you hand-coded every single bit of HTML on the page. They just want to see good, clean code with unique content. And if you optimized it with your titles and your H1s, even better. But that's what they care about. They're not really building their rankings on how did you build your site. It's the platform that you build your site on. How does it spit out the code?
Okay.
And everybody can go to their browser, right-click, view source, and it spits out that HTML. That's what Google cares about. The platform behind them doesn't really matter.
Okay, good to know. All right, so one of the things we planned on discussing was off-page SEO, because if there's an on-site SEO or on-page SEO, that implies that there's an off-site or off-page SEO.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just tell my side of this real quick, and then I'll get your input. But the off-page SEO is really all about links. It's about how Google looks at what the rest of the World Wide Web is saying about your site. And this happened because back in the day when the guys at Google were in college and they were trying to figure out how to make their search engine different, they looked at the papers. You know, in college, there's all the papers that people refer to other people's papers. They call them citations. You know, and they looked at the papers that had the most citations. Other people have referenced that paper. Those were the most popular papers. Those were the best papers. And Larry Page's concept was, what if we can take this concept to the web? What if we can figure out who's talking about these websites, and we'll go from there. We'll figure out who's most popular based on that. But no one had ever crawled the whole web before. In fact, I remember reading it in Stephen Levy's book. He talked about the name of the system was called Backrub because it was the first time they were going to try and go backwards from a website. And what they were going to do was actually download the whole World Wide Web onto disks. And he just kept going back to his professor and saying, I need more disks, I need more disks, I need more disks. And they just didn't realize the kind of data that was out there. And they would crawl all these sites, but the result was they could start seeing how sites talked about each other. And they could see how the links would go back to a certain website. And so the websites that had the most links were considered the most authoritative or the most popular. And that's when a little device called PageRank was invented. And most people think that's named after the rank of your page, but it's actually named after Larry Page. So
right.
A little tongue-in-cheek
yep.
thing. And so today, off-site SEO continues to be very, very important, but it's about those backlinks. And I want to do a whole show on backlinks, but I did just want to cover real quickly why on-page SEO is called on-page SEO when there's something obviously called off-page SEO. Did you want to add to that?
No, I think you did a great job on the explanation of how it's got the algorithm on Google was revolutionary. Its genesis was, we're going to be different because we look at links, and we're not just going to look at the content. So that ended things like, you know, keyword spam and stuffing and all those things. It really did go off that. So, yeah, and then, you know, that was early on, you know, 90s, early 2000s. You could really do a lot with links. Now, to date this podcast a little bit, we're in a Penguin 2.0 world now, and some of the link strategies that you probably talk about on the next podcast, we'll kind of talk about, you know, how to build links and what you should and shouldn't do. But yeah, great story there. I think
that's a perfect segue, because the same things that happen with your keyword stuffing and the meta description, those happen in the link world. And people abused it when they figured out, oh, if I just get a million links, then I'm going to be number one. And they abused it. And over the years, that abuse continued, and Google got smarter, and then the link building changed, and Google got smarter again. It's a little bit like the radar detector and the radar gun.
Right.
Here's a radar gun. Here's a better radar detector. Here's a better radar gun. Here's a better radar detector. And here we are, Penguin 2.0, which the whole point of is to determine good quality links versus spammy garbage links.
Yeah.
So,
can I talk about anchor text for 1 second?
Yeah, let's talk. Definitely.
One of the things we haven't talked about yet was, you know, anchor text and the radar gun, huge on the external side. From an on-page SEO strategy, there really isn't a radar gun. So when you're talking about having your site optimized and writing good, unique, original content, you know, if you have a tier 3 page, link back up to that tier 2 category page with good anchor text. You know, if you have a tier 2 page, link back to your home page with good, you know, anchor text for that primary keyword that you want to rank for. So one of the strategies we didn't talk about yet with on-page SEO is using anchor text within your own website. I don't think you can it probably isn't overdoing it, but I think it's, you could see it and point out, I think that's way overdone. But as long as you're thinking about it and doing it, that would be a great on-page strategy as well when it comes to internal linking your own website.
So what you're saying is, like, if the landscaper writes a blog article about, you know, preparing your lawn for fall, and he links back the words lawn preparation to the page of his site that's a little higher up, and where it says services, lawn preparation is one of them, that internal link tells Google, hey, these kind of talk to each other, and they're relevant to each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you link that post back to that service, and then you write the next post about stump removal, and you link it back to your stump removal services page. Everything needs to kind of have a tie-in back to that main services. You don't just want to write dead-end blog posts.
Yeah, you want to tell your readers where to go next.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
All right, perfect. So on-site creation content, though, on-site content creation is still super important. We've mentioned blogging. How important is it to keep your site fresh?
It's very important. It's one of the most important factors, I think, coming out of the Panda era.
Whoa, back up, Panda.
Panda. We all know Google came out with 2 algorithm updates, Panda and Penguin.
The next one is Porcupine, by the way.
Okay.
I really don't know.
I thought it was Zebra.
No, it has to be something that starts with a P.
Okay.
Panda, Pink, Porcupine. It could be, what else could it be?
I don't know.
Potamus? Wait, that's Hippopotamus. That's, all right, sorry.
So Penguin really focuses on your off-page SEO, your link strategies, and what sites point to you. Panda really was kind of the on-page. If you got bad, thin, duplicate content, sorry, buddy, but your website's going to come down off this ranking. So that's the Panda. So what we want to talk about is, you know, what we want to do is talk about I've lost my. You have to edit this. Where were we?
We're not editing this. No, we're good. Did the pee animals throw you off?
Yes.
All right, so let's talk about content. I'll take over for a bit, all right? And how important it is that the content is robust, fresh, unique. That's super important. You can't take someone else's content and use it anymore. And there was a lot of that. And then you said something else, thin content. I like that one, too, because I still see a lot of it. People write a 200 or 300-word blog article that doesn't even say anything. Just because someone told them, hey, you've got to have fresh content on your site. So like, all right, another blog article about this. Or they'll go find a $17 article that someone wrote and rewrite it themselves.
Right.
Or they'll spin the content.
Yeah.
So, on-site content needs to be awesome. It needs to be robust. It needs to tell the user something. Ask yourself, if you read this, are you better off having read it? If you're not, take that stuff down and put something good up. Because honestly, there is way too much internet pollution going on. There is so much garbage out there that people are putting on their website in the sake of fresh content that, and it's going to make everyone's lives more difficult. Even Google, they're trying to figure out what's garbage and what's quality. So that kind of leads to, you know, the next thing we were talking about, which was social signals. And I think social signals are a great way for Google and other search engines, and even users, to know if this article is worth reading. Is this article have, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 comments on it? Well, somebody was interested enough to say something about it. If you're on Yahoo News, you're going to see hundreds of comments, you know, because those people just don't ever shut up. But you get to a page that is all about plastic surgery, and they've got an article about tummy tucks, and they've got an article about weight loss, and they've got an article about nose jobs, and there's not a single comment on any of those articles. What is going on? What is that page all about? That page is just built to sell links or something like that. No one even cares about that content because it's thin, it's garbage, it's crap.
Yeah, it is. Social signals are going to be a huge factor, I think, moving forward with the algorithm and Google and all that. So social media and social marketing is not just, you know, getting your Facebook post out on, you know, Facebook 3 times a week and seeing what happens. Putting those buttons on your blog.
The share buttons.
Facebook, the Twitter, the Pinterest. You know,
Google Plus.
Don't forget that. You gotta have
that's
those.
Google's favorite, you know.
No. Yeah, well, and that stems into Google authorship, and that's very important as well too. So Google Plus for sure. Those buttons are going to be picked up on to say, okay, here's you know how to make your bed. You know, you want to rank for how to make your bed, or how to make. Let's use your analogy. How to make the best ice cream sundae. Somebody might want to rank for that. So Google's going to, okay, this post has 500 words, this post has 500 words. They're both pretty well optimized, domain authority. Say all that's kind of the same. In the near future, or if not already, if they can pick up on this post has 20 Google pluses and 15 Facebook likes and 30 tweets.
Or 3,000.
3,000. And this guy's got zero. What do you think is going to make them rank? It goes back to your citations analogy and the whole reason Google looked at links in the first place. It's just the evolution of that algorithm.
So are social signals the new links?
Some people say yes. Some people say they're coming. Some people say they're already here. So I think it behooves anybody who's building a blog or a WordPress site or any site for that matter to put those buttons in now, get them going. It can only help you. It can't hurt you.
What happens when people start to game that? You know, you can get on Fiverr.com right now and get 100 people to like your post or
right.
Hit that Google Plus button.
Google's going to build a better radar gun, like you said. They're going to figure out, okay, who are those 15 likes? And are those 15 likes real people or are those bot people, you know? Or on those 30 tweets that people liked you on, do those people have any followers? Or do they just follow a bunch of people and have 100 tweets a day? You know, those kinds of social signals are in their infancy now, so I don't know if Google's gone to make that next radar gun, but it's important that you don't try to game it either. I think it's kind of like going out and getting 1,000 links for $10, you know, those Fiverr.
Stay
away from that.
I think you could game it like crazy right now. I really do, because I don't think Google's watching for that. I don't think people are trying to game it enough that it's part of the algorithm yet, but if you do, it'll come back and bite you in the ass.
As Google turns up the dial to say, okay, we're going to use this as our algorithm, be sure that they're going to have that system in place to monitor as well. I think they're going to turn those dials at the same time. So, yeah, you could game it now.
No, because they learned from the whole link building.
But they're not going to put it in as a big algorithm factor until they have that secondary. I think that's the way it's going to roll out.
Well, if they don't, they need to listen to this podcast. That's pretty funny. Okay. What are some of the things that we would want to consider if we were going to do, and we've covered some of this, but if we were going to do SEO ourselves? I'm a small business owner. I've got a little WordPress page. Maybe it's a big WordPress page, and I don't want to hire an SEO. What are some things that I can just do myself? And we might be recapping some of the things we've already said.
Well, I just mentioned the Google authorship, which I didn't really touch on too much. Google Plus is not just another social media network. It actually is becoming a lot more for Google. So go on to Google Plus, get your account, get your pretty authorship photo uploaded, and start telling Google where you are going to author original great content that they should be concerned with, i.e. your company website, your blog. And that's going to be a great DIY tip for you there. You know, make sure you kind of own that content. If somebody else came along 3 months later and tried to rip it off, you know, at least you kind of have that anchor that, no, this was my content first. That's a good tip. Webmaster tools, again, with the plugins on Yoast and stuff like that with WordPress, those are already built in. Even if you had to manually do it in your code, get your webmaster tools verifications in on Google and on Bing. They will diagnose problems for you. They will tell you if you have 404 errors. That's a big thing that I'm finding today with a lot of my site audits is people have quote-unquote SEO their website. You know, they think that they should be ranking. My content's good, you know, but they don't realize that they have, you know, 200 broken JavaScript, CSS, something, you know, is broken in their site because it loads fine in the browser, but there are some of those hidden code elements that Google can kind of tell you about. Hey, you got some broken links. Those are great DIY tips. Also, and if you are a local company, a service provider, local's huge too. Get out there and make sure that you have, you know, you may say, I don't want to do Facebook, I don't want to do Twitter, I don't care about those. Get them, claim them, own your name, link them back to your website. If you're on Yelp, claim your listing on Yelp, Yellow Pages, you know, go out there and just get your listings and own your own stuff. That's the best DIY tip I can give anybody there.
We're actually going to do a future show on local SEO specifically, so
okay,
be on the lookout for that. I wanted to add to that. I think it's absolutely vital that people blog or at least have a news page or something where they add fresh content on a regular basis.
That's not even a recommendation. That's just a given for me.
But see, there's so many who still don't.
Yeah.
Like, you got a business owner and they're like, I don't have time to do that. Or they think that their industry is too boring to write about. So I really spend a lot of time convincing them, hey, you need to write a blog at least once a week. You know, if you can't, there are resources that you can get somebody to do it for you, but you need to appear as the authority. You know, if you're a pediatric dentist, you need to be writing articles about how soda and Gatorade rot your teeth, or at what age your kids should start seeing a dentist, or when they can start looking to get braces, or whatever that might be, because those are the things that people actually Google. They may not even Google pediatric dentist in Kansas City. They may not be looking for a pediatric dentist, but they might Google, you know, that I'm a brand new parent. I've got a six-month-old or a year-old, and the teeth are starting to come in. I think, you know, when are they supposed to go see a dentist? Anyway, I don't remember when I started seeing the dentist. So you go to Google and you say, when should a child start seeing the dentist? And you happen to have a freaking blog article with that title. You end up showing up for that and like, oh, well, this guy obviously knows something about it, so he's the pediatric dentist I'm going to take my kid to. And people forget that users, potential clients, don't always go looking for a business as much as they go looking for an answer. And blogs give them that. Blogs give them the answers to their questions. So if you're in a boring business, if you don't know what to blog about, just write down the 10 questions that your business, that your potential customers ask you all the time, and write the answers to those as your blog articles. You're right. It is a given. If you're not blogging, shame on you. Put your hand out right now. I'm going to give you a virtual slap. Get to blogging, I think, at least once a week. And don't put in thin garbage content just because somebody said you need to blog. Write something worth reading. Give your users something educational. Give them a call to action. Make them laugh. You can even write stuff that's controversial because that gets a lot of social shares too. So, but if they, let's say that the business owner listening to this is, I don't have time to blog, I don't have time to do HTML or add a Yoast plugin, and I don't have time for any of that. I'm running a business. I am going to hire somebody. Without talking too much about, let's not make this commercial, obviously. But what should they look for when they want to hire someone?
Right. First thing I would say is look at their past work. If they can provide case studies and tell you, this is what we've done in the past, this is how we've helped company X, and this is where they're at today. And you can go on Google and search and back it up and say, yep, that's where they're ranking. That's, they must have done that and they're doing good work. That's a, that's the number one thing. Talked about, you know, don't just go with the guy who's been spamming you off your website for the last 5 years. You know, that guy's probably not going to help you. Also ask for details in the plan, you know, in the first phone call, maybe not, but if you built that relationship and they've kind of come back with a proposal and you're really thinking about going with them, kind of nail them down and say, okay, what exactly are you going to do? If it's not already spelled out and they're telling you it's some kind of secret formula sauce, red flag, run the other way. There's no secret juice, secret sauce, secret something out there. I mean, we're very transparent at Sweet Spot Marketing. We try to tell you what we're going to do before we do it, and we partner with you in that relationship. We don't just say, trust us, write us a check, and we'll make it happen. We want you to know what's going on. You know, that's the other big, big, big thing. And then, again, look at their own website. See if they are the who they say they are. You know, if they don't have a blog that talks about the things that we talked about on this podcast with on-page SEO, then they may just be regurgitating something that they read in a magazine one day, and they really are not trying to back it up on their own website. So those are the three things, you know, that I would really look for.
What about expectations?
Good question. I forgot to mention, you know, a lot of empty promises are out there. You know, we'll get you ranking number one. We have guarantees on that. That's a red flag. Guarantees are a red flag because Google changes their algorithm. How are they going to back that guarantee up? No one's going to go out there and say, I can get you number one on this keyword tomorrow when Google's going to change their algorithm, you know, tomorrow. I think they publicly stated in the past they make more than one algorithm change a day.
Every day, yeah.
So guarantees are definite run from those people, red flag.
One of the things that I like to tell folks is that they need to give the SEO agency time. They should not expect results right away. You are not going to get immediate ranking jumps for your main keywords in the first 30 days, 60 days, even you know, 90 days. But at the same time, I don't like long-term contracts. If they are not performing after 6 months, you ought to be able to walk away. So the guy who asks for a year contract, that is kind of a red flag for me, unless it's just absolutely, it's just written out very clearly, this is, your website is dog terrible, and it's going to take a year to fix it. I don't, what are your thoughts on long-term contracts? I think if they're not succeeding, if they're not showing any progress at all, then you should be able to fire them.
Yeah, I think it all goes back in the initial conversations. Expectation setting is huge. If you get a boilerplate proposal with a boilerplate, you know, expectation, that's another red flag. You know, every time we send out a proposal, we try to look at your goals, what we think we can accomplish. And there is kind of that, okay, if you want to rank for, you know, the word shoes, okay, get in line behind Nike, Reebok, and Payless and everybody else, because that's a very competitive term. If you want to rank for, you know, the best pencil sharpening company in Kansas City, okay, I can probably make that happen pretty quick because there's no competition on it. So
you pull that out.
I looked down on my piece of paper and I saw a pen. I was like, well, I'll go pencil. So that's just one of those things where every case should be unique. And as a business owner, you should probably understand what your goals are. Maybe hard, maybe easy. And the SEO company that you're talking to should be able to kind of explain that to you. And if they're afraid to tell you that you're not going to rank for the word shoes, they just say, sure, go ahead, write me a check, I'll make it happen, then you should probably run.
They're just trying to get a check from you for as long as they can.
Exactly. So yeah, I found on the long-term contracts, typically I think a 6 month expectation is probably, or a 6 month agreement is probably the average. A year might be too long. 6 months, you should have showed them in the first 3 or 4 months that, hey, look, I'm already showing you your keyword footprint's getting bigger. You're getting more traffic. Those keywords that you want to rank for are climbing. The long tails are almost there. So by that 6 month, everybody's happy, and then we can go from there.
Right. So, I didn't mean to suggest that it would take 6 months. SEO is ongoing.
It's forever.
It is, right?
It is. Your competition's not going to stop. And if you stop, you're just leaving the door open for them to go around you. So it is a continual race. It's definitely a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, because when we first got into SEO, everyone thought, well, if you just SEO my site and I'll be set, not realizing that the algorithm changes every day, not realizing that your competition is constantly improving their stuff. So, yes, for any business owner who doesn't get that, I'm laid out there. SEO is forever. I'm sorry, but that's the case.
Blogging is a part of it. You know, if I told everybody to blog for 6 months and then stop, okay, well, then you're a year from now, your content's 365 days old at best,
yeah.
And you were starting to wonder why your rankings fell off. That's just an on-page factor. So definitely want to think long-term with SEO. It's like any other marketing. You can't stop running the TV ads. You can't stop running the radio spot. You got to keep them going to kind of keep your name out there.
All right. Well, we're about out of time, so I'd like to thank you, Kevin, for joining us. Thank you, Kevin, from Sweet Spot Marketing.
Thank you for having me, Dave. It was my pleasure.
Internet Marketing Insights is distributed by AMDG Radio. You can find out more at blogtalkradio.com/AMDG. The music is provided by my brilliant musician cousin, Scotty McBee. Thank you, Scotty. And don't forget, you can visit davidmcbee.com/IMI, where you'll be able to replay or share this episode, get a recap and even some visual aids. I think in this episode, we'll put some pictures of title tags and maybe some of those plugins for WordPress. And, of course, the contact information for both Kevin and myself will be there. We would love to hear from you on Google+ or Twitter or Facebook or wherever. And that's about it for us. So thank you for joining us. Now go do something awesome.